Thursday, May 31st, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. I want to begin today by discussing something that a friend shared with me, and I won't give this too much time as it's not really deserving of much of our time. But Eva Bartlett brought it to my attention today that NewsBud has been using TLAV content in order to coax people into signing up to their paywall-blocked site. And this is especially disingenuous considering that they currently have us blocked. So I just wanted to quickly point out to any of you out there who may have seen this that The Last American Vagabond in no way supports, works with, or advocates for NewsBud. And if you're interested in knowing more about why, check out the recent interview I did with Eva Bartlett where we discuss the truth-bending smear pieces done by NewsBud on Eva Bartlett, Vanessa Bealey, and James Corbett, all seemingly focused on those speaking truth about Syria prior to the false flag and the U.S. attack. This and other aspects suggesting that the U.S. attack on Syria was planned, even before the false flag. But we go into more detail within the interview, but such controlled opposition or just manipulative profiteering sites are everywhere today, which is exactly why it's more important than ever to stand back and analyze why you see things the way you do and in what ways your surrounding environment may influence your perception, most notably the media you choose to consume. In a country where manipulative propaganda is now legally allowed to be used on the American public, thanks to the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which allows false information to be disseminated by news organizations and the government for purposes of national security, of course, it is extremely important, necessary even, to ask yourself why and how you come to the conclusions you do. So let's get right into it. For the first story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, U.S.-Turkey said to reach deal for withdrawal of Turkish forces from key Syrian town. Turkey has announced a new agreement with the U.S., which will involve the pullout of all U.S. Kurdish forces from the contested northern Syrian city of Manbij. The Turkish foreign minister previously indicated, quote, a roadmap for the Syrian city of Manbij may be implemented before the end of this summer if a deal is reached between Turkey and the U.S. Taking over the city will last until a new administration is formed, as per an agreement with the United States. However, as of Tuesday, the State Department denied reaching an agreement with Turkey on this issue, indicating that talks were still ongoing. But there's so much to take out of this. The idea that a roadmap being planned out about sovereign Syrian territory and the fact that they've already come to an agreement about what's going to happen after they're done. Very, very interesting and revealing. And as I've said from the very beginning here, and subsequent events in my eyes have confirmed this, that the move by Turkey into Syria seemingly to fight U.S.-backed forces, as they claim, in my eyes was a ploy to not only take more land from Syria, but to shift the conversation away from why the U.S. is illegally occupying Syrian territory and jumping back and forth between being there to fight ISIS and stopping Assad, whichever suits the day's agenda, over to how to resolve the NATO allies confrontation, agreeing to work together, foregoing the point that both are there illegally. This is really the point that I see, is that really this all comes down to this idea that they're now, the discussion has been shifted over to their disagreement. And that they're, and the point they make there about the until a new administration is formed, I mean, this just very clearly shows you the agenda. And almost inadvertently, I would argue that the point is to overthrow Assad and that they're chopping up his territory before it's even over with. I really do think, and this is just my opinion, as I've said before, but it seems very clear to me that this whole Turkey aspect, clearly a NATO ally in this, was, I would argue, probably discussed beforehand behind the scenes. And they're using this as a way to shift the conversation away. And even now, still, oh, no, that, you know, the State Department denies that. And there's still, there's an argument going on. Meanwhile, they're both occupying illegally Syrian territory. Very important to understand that fact. And even more, and importantly, even more so in my eyes, is Assad actually just said that he will act with force, even against U.S.-backed forces, if they stop him from continuing to take back his own territory. Because very clearly here we can see that the U.S., their efforts have failed as of the last so many years in Syria. We've seen what they've been trying to accomplish, and likely due to the support of other countries like Russia, Assad has very clearly stopped what they're trying to do. And he's been very successful, actually, in fighting off ISIS, the group that the U.S. claimed to be there to fight, the whole premise to begin with why they were there, and then just became, oh, oops, Assad's bad, so we'll fight him too. But that's really the whole point there. But so Assad has effectively, with the help of Iran predominantly, actually stopped the proxy army ISIS, which is a U.S. proxy. And so it's very interesting to see how this is playing out. So this could be coming to a head here where we're seeing Assad actually stand toe-to-toe with U.S.-backed forces, even possible U.S. forces, which would no doubt draw in Israel and Russia, which nobody really wants to see happen. But I really think this is a whole ploy meant to draw the conversation away from what's really going on. So keep that in mind as this moves forward. Moving on to the next story coming from disobedientmedia.com. CIA undermines North Korea summit by leaking report to media asset. Just as it was reported that the summit between the United States and North Korea was back on and that the vice chairman of North Korea was on his way to New York to meet with officials in preparation for the June 12th summit, the CIA leaked an intelligence assessment concluding that, quote, North Korea does not intend to give up its nuclear weapons anytime soon. The timing of this leak is striking as it seems to be an effort to undermine negotiations between the two nations and comes just days after ranking members of the Democratic Party and Republican hardline openly attacked President Trump over his efforts to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The identity of the reporter who helped break the story also raises serious questions about whether or not a faction within the CIA is deliberately attempting to undermine diplomatic efforts to ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula. According to NBC News, the report was leaked to none other than NBC national security reporter Ken Delanian, known as the CIA's mop-up man. I mean, I think it's pretty clear what's taking place here, but I think I take a little bit different from this than many do. I've often argued that Trump is either a piece in this game or is aware of what's going on, but the point is they absolutely do not want to see peace take place here. And they were forced back into this deal because their moves previous kind of blew up in their face and it didn't work the way they planned. That's how I see it. That's my take on what's going on here. Very clearly, and I haven't really been reporting on the back and forth about this because it's been a bunch of nonsense that they say it's still on or it might happen soon or, you know, it's all this nonsense hypothetical discussions. Maybe it will happen on the 12th. Who knows? As far as I know, the U.S. pulled out recently and that's where I left the story until I see anything actually reportable to happen other than just it may happen or there's a nice talk between them or they're still meeting and discussing it, which is everything we're seeing in the mainstream media. But the fact that the CIA came out and leaked this is it's one of two things here. Either they're very clearly trying to stop this from happening, which I would tie right back to people like John Bolton and Pompeo, or they all don't want this to happen, and this is their way of making an excuse to make sure it doesn't happen. But we'll see how it pans out here. My guess, it's not going to take place for whatever reason. We'll have to wait and see what happens here. But this is very clear that at least some faction does not want to see this take place. And that should be alarming to us. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, arms manufacturer Lockheed Martin opening preschools in Jerusalem. One of the biggest weapons manufacturers in the world is setting up shop in Jerusalem to deliver education programs to children as young as 5. Lockheed Martin is famous for manufacturing the F-35 fighter jet, famed for pummeling Palestinians in Gaza. The American aerospace and weapons firm is now partnering with the Israeli Education Ministry to open a one-of-a-kind school in Jerusalem. The company, known worldwide for developing state-of-the-art killing machines, already has several schools in Israeli cities today, but the new school will be the first in Jerusalem. It is due to open during the 2018-2019 school year and is said to be quite unique. Israeli sources say that, quote, the facility will seek to foster and boost advanced technology, apparently from the earliest age possible. Kids as early as 5 or 6 will be provided with computers and state-of-the-art technology to develop what one presumes will be the finest minds in the art of killing. Lockheed's kindergarten will cost $250,000, with the American company footing most of the bill. This is such a perfect example of absolute social programming taking place and how the simple idea that a company like Lockheed Martin is in any way connected to the idea of education should be very alarming to us and should show us that there is a very clear effort here around the world to manipulate the minds of the youth to be okay with the kind of constant war scene that we have around the world, and really just help to train the youth to be able to be better fighters and creators of killing machines, as they say there. And it's very weird to see this happen. I don't know why anybody would see this and think that it's normal, but the fact that there's already a bunch of schools in Israel based that created by Lockheed Martin is a little alarming to begin with. We should also be asking why they're in Israel. It just seems like a very weird connection there, but clearly we're going to see this continue to happen. I would argue more than just Israel, but this stands out to me as very alarming to see that this is even happening. And the fact that there's a very clear connection between these United States munitions companies and Israeli schools. There's just yet another connection with Israel and the United States, especially with the military-industrial complex. Very, very weird. For the next story coming from mintpressnews.com, Israel's one-of-a-kind new apartheid wall to choke Gaza, a triple-layered sea barrier. Israel's seemingly endless means of choking off the Palestinians' ability to live as normal human beings will be on full display with a new $833 million sea barrier being erected. It will include a submarine barrier, a stone wall, and a layer of barbed wire that will be surrounded by an additional fence. Hardline Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman describes the barrier as a one-of-a-kind-in-the-world measure that protects the occupation with power and sophistication and prevents the people of Gaza from entering Israeli-controlled territory by sea. Yet it also stops them from leaving in general or effectively fishing for food, which I would argue is the real point of all of it. The 1993 Oslo Accord permits Palestinians in Gaza to take part in fishing within the maritime corridor, which extends 20 miles from the coast. The Israelis began ignoring this agreement in 2000 and have typically limited vessels to a maximum of 3 to 6 miles, if at all. A blatant breach of the landmark agreement Tel Aviv signed with the Palestine Liberation Organization, showing yet again how Israel openly and flagrantly disregards such international agreements whenever it feels like it, with absolutely zero consequences. And the U.S. ensures that nothing happens while demonizing its enemies for far, far less. Gazian fishermen venturing offshore generally risk death or injury for attempting to ply their trade, as generations of Palestinians have done before them, and are usually greeted by warning shots from Israeli naval forces or are simply fired upon from the beginning. On Tuesday, a Palestinian vessel carrying 17 students, patients, and wounded victims from the recent mass protests at the Gaza border was detained as it attempted to seek help outside the Israeli-imposed siege. The boat was transferred to the port of Ashdod and had been accompanied by smaller vessels from Gaza before Israeli troops began opening fire on the seaborne assembly. The protest action came before the 8th anniversary of the deadly Israeli raid on the Mavi Marmara, a Turkish flagship that had attempted to enter Gaza by sea to deliver aid in defiance of the Israeli blockade, which we recently talked about, where innocent civilians were killed and injured simply because they tried to bring help to the Palestinians who were suffering. And this is the actions of the Israeli government simply for people trying to come and go, which is a very alarming thing to see. But this kind of a thing, see this sea barrier being built, how I don't understand how anyone can see this as some kind of a normal action, especially when we have to understand that it's very clear history here that the Israelis took the land from the Palestinians, committed open genocide by stealing their land and kicking them into a small controlled area, and somehow claiming that they're the ones that are hurting the Israelis. It's absolutely backward. And I actually saw an interesting coverage today showing that most Americans don't even fully understand that they actually think that Palestinians are occupying Israeli territory, which is just absolutely crazy. We have to begin to understand the real history here and see where this all stems from. And I've talked about this many times over. So if you want to look into more about the Zionist aspect of why this is happening and what's really going on here, some of my last videos really further get into that. But the idea of this sea barrier being built, it's just flagrant. And it shows you not only are they trying to control what's happening here and control people from getting in to be able to document it, but they're really just, it just seems spiteful. Like they really just want to hurt these people. And we have to understand that there's much more behind this than some kind of a political move. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from fair.org, Washington Post editors, we have to help destroy Yemen to save it. Over the past year, the Washington Post editorial board has routinely ignored the U.S.'s involvement in the siege of Yemen, a bombing and starvation campaign that has killed over 15,000 civilians and left roughly a million with cholera. As Fair noted last November, the Washington Post ran a major editorial and an explainer detailing the carnage in Yemen without once mentioning the U.S.'s role in the conflict, instead pinning it on the seemingly rogue actions of the Saudis and those dastardly Iranians. In recent months, however, the Post has charted a new course, vaguely acknowledging Washington's role in the bloody siege, but insisting that the U.S. should remain involved in the bombing of Yemen for the sake of humanitarianism. In two recent editorials, the Washington Post has cooked up a new tortured position that the U.S. should not stop supporting the Saudis, a move 30-year CIA veteran and Brookings fellow Bruce Rydell argued in 2016 would, quote, end the war overnight, but mildly chide the Saudis into committing slightly fewer war crimes while moving towards some vague exit plan. Monday's editorial took this faux humanitarian half measure one step further with a bit of revisionist history. Literally, quote, both the Obama and Trump administrations have offered limited support to the Saudi coalition while trying to restrain reckless bombing and the exacerbation of the humanitarian crisis, which is just a blatant lie in more ways than one. The U.S.'s support, from logistical support to refueling, to sending $110 billion in arms, to political cover at the UN, to literally choosing targets on a map, has been crucial to carrying out the 3.5-year campaign. The U.S. support here is not ancillary, it's essential. Without it, there would be no bombing campaign. But we have to. This is exactly the kind of propaganda that I'm talking about, where the Washington Post, I mean, most are pretty damn aware that the Washington Post is nothing but a propaganda outlet today, but they're very clearly trying to bend the narrative to make it seem like the U.S. is not only not involved, but that they're actually coming to the rescue of the very people that they're helping to murder. And that's a very alarming thing to see. And just as the author astutely points out, the problem is the Washington Post is charged with a contradictory task: to act as a very concerned champion of human rights while propping up the core tenets of Americans' imperial foreign policy. It's an extremely difficult sleight of hand when the U.S. is backing a bombing campaign targeting some of the poorest people on Earth. So their support of this slaughter is actually spun as an attempt to rein it in. The U.S. is going to bring down the system from the inside. Such a perfect way to point that out. But it's just, we have to begin to see how this is taking place and how they're constantly trying to bend our opinion. Just as I pointed out yesterday, the U.S. government is in a very bad position today and is flagrantly struggling to maintain its political clout while still keeping its ruling oligarchs happy with its military-focused occupation efforts around the world. And to do this, they at least need to appear to have the support of the populace that they've tricked into thinking live in a democratic society, which they also brazenly claim to the world on a regular basis. So as Americans increasingly wake up to the abysmally anti-America first policies of the current administration, as well as the ones before it, they will absolutely be stepping up their efforts to either win back the American minds with intense programming and propaganda, like we saw with the Washington Post, or if need be, with brute force. But the latter is much harder to get away with and still maintain the illusion. So it is paramount that we keep spreading the word, getting the right information in the hands of those who can affect the most change, and do all you can in your own communities to actually live the change you want to see take place. There's no better way to lead than by example. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.